Hello, and thanks for tuning in. My guest today is Joel Ron, the CTO of Thomson Reuters. And the topic of conversation is Model Context Protocol.
Thanks for having me today, Cliff. So MCP is a communication protocol for AI agents. Very plainly, it's quite similar to an API or an application programming interface for machine-to-machine communication. But MCP itself is a communication program that's tailored for how agents communicate. And it really facilitates one agentic platform talking to one or more other agentic platforms, ultimately, to get work done.
So if we look at one of the ways that Thomson Reuters has used MCP. So I understand that you've been doing some work with Anthropic. Can you tell me a little bit about how that got started and what you're doing now with it?
Absolutely. So Thomson Reuters, one of our flagship AI products, is called CoCounsel. And we have CoCounsel for legal as well as for tax and audit and compliance. But in particular, like most recently within legal, we have released a new version of CoCounsel that is an agent that specializes not just in legal research, but also in, you know, contract drafting and other sorts of legal work. And we have not just built an application around this CoCounsel agent, but we've also built an MCP connector to the agent itself. And that MCP connector is now also available in Claude. So you can effectively interact with that same agent that you're interacting with in CoCounsel through Claude. And in many ways, Claude itself, the model, is interacting with our agent in CoCounsel. And so there's really like a, Google has released a similar protocol called agent-to-agent communication. And so it really is like agent-to-agent communication to facilitate whatever work a user might be trying to.
I mean, it seems like an obvious question, so I'm going to ask it. I mean, CoCounsel is a product that Thomson Reuters provides as a service to its clients, its customers. These are people in the legal profession. I guess they're using it to, is it for document searches, legal filings?
They use CoCounsel for all types of legal matters. So it could be to do legal research to prepare for a litigation or a court filing, like a memo or a motion or something like this. It could be to sort of analyze documents for risks during a due diligence process for M&A or otherwise. It could be to execute playbooks and risk analysis against contract and procurement operations, or anything in between. So it really sort of covers the gamut of legal work there, both for law firms as well as for corporate, you know, counsels as well.
So what is the difference then between a Reuters client who is using CoCounsel and someone coming in via Claude using the MCP connectivity?
You know, I think the way to think about the two applications, you know, general AI versus like industry specific AI, is really, you know, in a legal context, like the business of law versus the practice of law. You know, there are many things that can be done through Claude, and you can get to really good outputs in that case. But certainly in the case of law, like being good is not good enough. Like, and when you have to sort of file a motion with a court or stand in front of a judge or something like this, where sort of your reputation or your client's reputation, or certainly some monetary outcome is on the line, it's quite significant. And so our focus in terms of CoCounsel is really on building AI products that deliver, you know, a fiduciary grade level of performance. And so I think that's how you think about where those two applications live. And certainly a user can log into CoCounsel and use CoCounsel as a standalone application. But our belief is like much of the sort of business of law they may do through something like Claude, when they're just doing general like workplace productivity things, but there are contexts where like legal judgment is necessary in that process. And that's where co-counsel shows up as an MCP connector in Claude. And it adds this like fiduciary grade level of analysis to whatever like activities Claude might be doing.
I mean, I guess the bottom line is from a client perspective is, if you are a user of Claude, is there, I mean, I guess there must be some kind of a license that you have with Claude in order to facilitate that.
So if you're a Claude user, you would also need to be a co-counsel licensed user as well to be able to use co-counsel through Claude.
Yes, yeah. I mean, that makes sense. just moving on a bit, what from a technical perspective and at a high level, I mean, I'm not asking for bits and bytes and bits of code here, but what was involved in developing and creating that link, the MCP between yourselves and Claude?
You know, honestly, the high hill to climb is on the development of co-counsel, the agent. And namely making that agent highly, highly capable, you know, again, to a fiduciary grade, you know, standard in our view. And so that's really where we have been spending, you know, 99.9% of our time and hours. Once that agent is capable, I mean, presuming it's been developed in a reasonably modern way, like the connectivity to it is actually not that difficult. You know, the MCP server and the MCP client itself, you know, works with the native APIs that are sort of built in the product, like from day one. You know, sort of the main pieces of, I would say, engineering involve like authentication between the two products and making sure that like the connection is secure and private, and that customer data is, you know, protected in an appropriate way. And that's really what we try to ensure through building of the MCP tool. But once that's done, the connectivity between the two platforms is actually quite simple.
Mm. I mean, I guess, Joel, it's a bit like opening up an internal API to a third party.
It's very, very similar to this. But again, the interaction mechanism of an API to a third party has like a very concrete contract by which you communicate. Like, it has properties that you need to sort of communicate in a JSON payload or something like this. Whereas an MCP tool has a more natural language interface, and the MCP tool itself sort of interprets and understands like the requests coming in and how to handle those requests in a more natural language way. So the sort of principle of the communication protocol is very analogous to an API. But the sort of mode of interaction is built more for agents and natural language interaction versus like programmatic schemas.
I mean, are there did you have to put in place guardrails? What I'm thinking about is with agentic workflows, you know, it's natural language, right? So they're potentially people could talk in Claude and ask queries through Claude, and that would enable and provide access into CoCounsel to answer those questions. But if on the client side, it's also agentic, and for the sake of argument, they may be asking a question about contract law that means a search across your entire database of contract law, but not just asking it once, but asking it hundreds and thousands of times because of the way their agentic workflow is set up. In other words, in the old case of APIs, that management, there would have been a kind of like a threshold where the system would just say, hey, by the way, you know, you could do 5 calls, you could do 1,000 calls, but no more than that, you know, in a certain period of time. And how do you sort of play that? How do you prepare for, you know, how it's going to be used? Then what can't, you know, in software development, one that can't, we don't really understand how the product will be used in the end, and particularly now with agentic AI, it could be overused.
Yeah, and you know, further compounding that uncertainty is that the agent itself, Claude the agent, is using the tool. It's almost like the human can invoke the MCP connector directly, but like more times than not, Claude, the agent, is actually invoking the MCP tool, and it can do whatever it wants to do. It's sort of making its own plan and coming up with its own trajectory of work and cycling through that iterations as many times as sort of it deems necessary. And so, you know, for that reason, like, you do have wide error bars in terms of like your expectations of how the interaction will happen. And so we very much apply similar patterns in terms of rate limiting and restrictions and things like that to kind of keep the train on the tracks, if you will. And so those constructs are very similar to how you might think of like an API rate limit. And in many ways, they're identical.
I know I asked you about the MCP interface, and you said, well, actually, all the hard work has been done in CoCounsel itself. Can we talk a little bit about the hard work? I mean, how long has that been under development?
Yeah, I mean, CoCounsel itself has been under development for 3+ years. I mean, really since the early days of ChatGPT. You know, we acquired a company 3 years ago called Casetext, who was one of the first legal AI assistants in the market. And CoCounsel has really been under construction since then. About 9 months ago, we took really a ground up rebuild of CoCounsel. And we took a very agent first approach to how we rebuilt it. And in particular, we took a very coding agent orientation to how we rebuilt CoCounsel. And we did that very closely in partnership with Anthropic and their team. And what we really focused on through that process was really two things. One is giving access to our content tools to the agent natively. So if you think about TR as a company, Westlaw, Practical Law, under those products are just amazing, you know, the world's best content and information and expertise about these industries and about the practices of law. And we have exposed now those applications and the search functions and the Keysight applications and the all of that information to the agent natively. And the agent now can use these tools very natively to sort of discover and plan and execute work the same way a human lawyer would use those tools to execute work. And so that was really like profound step change. The other thing we did is we spent, you know, hundreds of thousands of man hours with our internal experts developing what we call CoCounsel Bench, which is really like our evaluation framework for the agent. And that really is what drives the hills that we climb from an agent development standpoint and helps us understand, are we making progress or are we not across all of these different segments of law? And I would say those two things really grounded a lot of the rebuild of CoCounsel the agent, and have given us confidence that, you know, we've got the best legal AI agent in the world right now.
I want to sort of ask you a bit, well, not a personal question, but a bit about your career. So when did you join Thomson Reuters?
I joined Thomson Reuters about 4 years ago. I was the CTO of an AI company that Thomson Reuters acquired. I joined the company, helped integrate the company that TR acquired, which actually, you know, part of it now actually sits behind CoCounsel even. You know, shortly thereafter, I took over as head of our AI research and development lab for a couple of years. About a year and a half ago, I took over as chief technology officer. And so in this role, I lead all of our product development teams across not just legal, but tax and compliance, audit, risk, as well as our AI research and development teams, which are global as well.
I mean, I guess having come from an AI company, you've sort of got a commercial hat on. And it's has that been an advantage to you as, well, Thomson Reuters being a very, very much an information and content company, pushing the boundaries now of AI, and, you know, and that means greater use of technology. Is it something that aligns very closely with your skills and what you brought previously from the AI firm that you were working for?
You know, I think two things have been, you know, an advantage for me. Perhaps these weren't sort of planned or expected or foreseeable, but you know, one thing is I'm actually not a computer scientist by background. I'm a mechanical engineer, and I used to work on sonar systems a long time ago in simulators, and that's kind of how I got into computer science. And you know, I think my career has taken a lot of like sort of unpredictable paths and turns along the way, and I think that like level of adaptability has really helped me in this environment. Like, I think the pace of change that we're experiencing requires like high levels of conviction, but very like easily changed conviction. Like, you need to be able to like have strong opinions, but change those opinions any day. And I think that level of adaptability is very important right now. The other thing is it necessitates like a high velocity. Velocity, you know, has components of direction and speed, and like you need to have high velocity as an organization with a focused direction and really moving at pace. And I think that's one thing that working at any startup you have to learn to be successful, is to have really intense focus and to move fast. And bringing that into TR, I think, has been much needed through this change.
How does a culture of the an organization as established as Thomson Reuters and there are other large enterprises move from where they were to the, I guess, the pace of AI, which is every 6 months there's a new, better model? And it's not just about being agile, which I think I spoke to Thomson Reuters many years ago, and I think agile was at least on their way of thinking. If not in practice, that's what they wanted to achieve. How do you go from agile to be uber agile to where things do change so rapidly?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot of things, and it's not overnight by any stretch of the imagination. I would say, you know, a lot of it comes down to really deeply understanding how decisions get made. I think at the end of the day, it's not that like, you know, we don't have great engineers using AI tools and moving at pace, or great designers or great product managers like moving and thinking at pace. At the end of the day, I think it all boils down to decision making. And I think really deeply understanding like how do decisions get made, and how do you make the universe for any given decision as small and as low in the organization as you can. And that can be through sort of organizational design or team topology. You want to make sure you're making great decisions. You have high judgment people making those decisions, and you're making them with the fewest amount of people as low in the organization as you can. And I think it's a litany of process analysis, organizational design, et cetera, culture that goes into creating that. But I think ultimately that's the North Star that like you try to create to move fast.
Well, we started with a very, very short and brief question. Let's end with one. Given the pace of change, I won't ask you where do you see things going in 5 years' time? Where do you see things going in 6 months' time?
Yeah, in 6 months' time, it's a good question. I think that's probably the right time scale. I think what we've seen in the last 6 months with AI development tools has been like a profound change of the occupation. Like, engineers fundamentally operate differently than they did 6 months ago. And that was driven by agentic coding tools. And I say namely agentic coding tools because the LLMs themselves have gotten good, but the paradigm of how agents work and how they emulate human behavior in a way has really shifted the pattern of like software development. And I think in 6 months' time, you will see the patterns of other parts of work change in that same way. Like, you will see agents operating in more humanistic contexts, and the need for human governance of that process and ultimately accountability and trust in what's happening will go way up. Because in coding, that's sort of like self-governed. Like, you have like GitHub, and you have diffs on code, you have PR reviews, you have stage gates that like enforce this auditability. In other aspects of industry, like law and tax, those are not necessarily well built today in the same way. And I think this human governance and oversight will be tremendously important as those changes start to proliferate into other disciplines.
You can find the full article on www.computerweekly.com, and the podcast can be downloaded on iTunes and Amazon Music.